Okay, here we go.
All right. So this is obviously very informal, just the three of us, so feel free to stop me along the way with any kind of questions you have. But we're going to talk about the City of Portland's biosolids program, the benefits that we've seen and what we're doing, and kind of what the future of the program is. First of all, I think most people know that biosolids are part of what's left over in wastewater treatment. What a lot of people don't realize is there's very strict regulatory criteria you have to meet before you can really be called biosolids. A lot of people think, oh, it's just the solid stuff in your wastewater. No, I mean, we have to meet some very strict criteria, the first of which is pathogen reduction, disease-causing organisms. We have to reduce the level of pathogens in our biosolids. Second is what's called vector attraction reduction. The attractiveness of the product to things that can transmit disease, a crow, a rat, a mosquito, things like that. And finally, levels of pollutants in our biosolids, everything from lead to cadmium and various other pollutants. If you are missing any one of these criteria or any part of one of these criteria, you do not have biosolids. You cannot go to a beneficial reuse like we're doing now through land application. And that's a very important distinction that not a lot of the general public understands. So I'll take you through these one at a time here. First of all, pathogen reduction. So again, reducing disease-causing organisms that are present, obviously, in any kind of a wastewater residual is going to be a pretty big deal. So you guys saw our digesters, and we're actually building two new digesters, that anaerobic environment heated up to about 100 degrees Fahrenheit. And we have a requirement for what's called Class B pathogen reduction. And what that is time and temperature. The solids inside these digester tanks have to be processed for a minimum of 15 days at a minimum of 95 degrees Fahrenheit. And when you cook up stuff like that, very similar to like the pasteurization process for your milk or your juice, at that temperature for that long a time without oxygen, you have a tremendous die-off in the amount of pathogens that were in your wastewater sludge. And here you go, 15 days at 95 degrees. Typically, we far exceed that requirement, where it may be 20 days at 100 degrees Fahrenheit. So we always like to do a little bit better than what the regulation calls for. One other thing that we monitor is what's called fecal coliform. Fecal coliform is what's called an indicator organism. If it's present, then it's very possible that other wastewater pathogens are present as well. As you can imagine, there are thousands of different species of wastewater pathogens. You couldn't possibly test for all of them. So you test for fecal coliform to kind of get a general sense of what's still living. And the EPA limit for, again, Class B biosolids is your fecal coliform has to be less than 2 million per gram of biosolids. And last year, we were about 59,000. So you can see we're far below the regulatory criteria for pathogens for both the time and temperature and the fecal coliform, which really demonstrates a high level of pathogen destruction. And we actually take this one step further when we actually get out into the field. So the first step of pathogen reduction happens here at the treatment plant in those digesters. The second step happens in the field. Any questions on this? Second is that vector attraction reduction requirement. Things like flies and rats, they really like organic material. That's what they're attracted to go get food. So what we have to do, and it happens in these digesters as well, is we have to reduce what's called the volatile solids portion of the solids by 38%. Volatile solids is really a representation of the organic portion of the waste. So inside this digester, that organic matter is essentially broken down, creates some byproducts like the methane gas that generates power at the treatment plant. So again, the regulatory requirement is to reduce volatile solids by 38%. We're right at about 63% last year. So once again, a very high level of treatment compared to the standard. The other thing that reducing the volatile solids does, it really knocks back the odor of the product. I don't know if you guys got to the solids processing building or smelled our final product, but it's really more of an earthy type of a smell than anything offensive. And once it's further spread out on the field, it's even dissipated even more. So as kind of a byproduct or a beneficial byproduct of this process, we get a pretty dramatic odor reduction as well. Finally, levels of pollutants in biosolids. The Environmental Protection Agency, in their rulemaking, did an extensive risk assessment on what's present in biosolids, you know, what kind of pollutants and at what levels are they present that could possibly cause an environmental or a human health concern. So they developed standards based on this risk assessment for these 9 trace organic compounds you see here. Arsenic, cadmium, copper, lead, mercury, molybdenum, nickel, selenium, and zinc. Once again, if you exceed the EPA standard for any one of these metals, you do not have biosolids. Game over. You're probably going to a landfill or an incinerator. You cannot beneficially reuse it. This is a log scale over here, so don't be misled to think that, we're right under lead. That's probably an order of magnitude right there. Just trying to get everything on the same scale here. And one of the things I like to point out here is the quality of biosolids over time, and this is in the city of Portland, but you're going to find the same trend all across the country, has dramatically improved over time. You can see lead in the city of Portland biosolids from 1981 till 2005, and there's a pretty dramatic trend here. You see here this decline. What happened in the early 80s here is the start of what were called industrial source control and pretreatment programs. This policed the industries that were discharging into the Portland sewer system. I don't know who we have around here, Steinfeld's, Pickles, Nabisco, all these companies, and said they have to clean up their waste before they discharge it to the city. And this is what happened as a result, a dramatic decline in lead in Portland biosolids. Now, the EPA established 2 limits for every one of those metals I showed you before. One is called the ceiling limit. If you're above the ceiling limit, no biosolids, sorry, you cannot land apply it. Again, you're probably going to a landfill at that point. They also established what's called the PC limit, or pollutant concentration limit. This was saying, if you're below this level, you are so clean, you can essentially use the stuff as normal fertilizer. And if you get below this level, a lot of the regulations relax as well, because that's great quality stuff. So you can see we're below this more stringent level, and you're going to find the same thing for every one of those compounds I showed you on the previous graph. So that's something we're proud of. With respect to all the regulations, we're pretty much exceeding everything that EPA has set in terms of the safeguards in place for biosolids. You probably saw this in the solids processing building. Go ahead, Mary.
So what about some of the pharmaceuticals now that people are worried about and drinking water?
So pharmaceuticals is an excellent question, and is probably the question most on the mind for wastewater professionals these days. They've always been there. It's just that now that we have these techniques that can, detect them at parts per trillion level. One of the neat things about the biosolids regulation is they establish these limits, but as part of EPA's 503 regulation, they have to review it every 2 years. So if something comes up that we didn't think about before, like pharmaceuticals, EPA does a brand new risk assessment, looks at if there's a concern with pharmaceuticals. The predominant theory right now, as a lot of university research has taken place, is it's not an issue. These compounds are strongly sorbed to the soil particles, essentially restricting their movement into the plant, and obviously from the plant to an animal or us or an earthworm. A lot of these compounds are subject to photodegradation over time. Most likely, it seems to be that they're relatively immobile in the environment. They'll get stuck to a soil particle and essentially stay there and degrade over time. But it is being researched because it is a question of concern. But right now, all the research is pointing to it's not going to be a concern. And we'll get a little more into that as we get into what actually happens in the field. But that's an excellent question. University of Washington did a study on estrogen-type compounds, showed no plant uptake. The University of Georgia, I believe, did a study on some surfactants, some industrial detergents, and showed a great deal of photodegradation by the sunlight. And the University of Florida just looked at triclosan, the antimicrobials that are in soaps, and found those are immobile in the environment. They essentially stay put. And again, what we like to point out a lot is your exposure to the product and the regular use when you're washing your hands or is far more than what you're going to be exposed to 3 levels across, in biosolids. But that's an excellent question. It is being researched, but everything is showing right now that it's not very likely not going to be a problem. I like that question.
What was that?
Yeah.
You mentioned University of Washington, University of Georgia, and University
Florida. Florida's another one. And I could go on and on and on. So you guys probably saw this down in sludge processing, our final cake product. This is what came out of the digester. We're squeezing the water out, and we're left with about a 21% what's called a cake product at that point. And I don't know if you guys managed to see a truck during the tour, but where does it go? We have a contract hauler, Gresham Transfer here, who has been hauling for us since 1992. So a long history with this company. You can see since 1992, over 36,000 loads of biosolids have been taken off of this plant. About 35 wet tons of biosolids per truck and pup here head out. And we have 6 to 7 of these trucks every day. That's 24 hours, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. And last year we did 2,013 loads of biosolids in 2009. Gresham Transfer has... two things I'd like to point out. Since 1992 and this 36,000 loads, not a single major accident or spill, which is phenomenal track record for driver safety. And they have a commitment to new equipment. This year they will be buying 2010 brand new trucks, which will of course meet the 2010 EPA diesel emission standards, which are the most stringent in the world. So we are very happy to say that our biosolids hauler will be using the most clean and efficient burning diesel engines in the world as a result of their upgrade. Gresham Transfer is the company based in Wood Village. So where does the stuff go? Okay, we have a contract with Madison Farms located near Echo, Oregon, approximately 180 to 200 miles east of the treatment plant, just off of Interstate 84. And there we have over 5,000 acres of Oregon DEQ authorized land where we can land apply our biosolids for beneficial use. The background picture you see here is where we have the majority of our authorized land, 4,578 acres of dry land pasture for City of Portland biosolids. We also have a small amount in dry land small grains. This here is soft white winter wheat, and a small amount in irrigated circles. What you're seeing right here is canola, which eventually turns into biodiesel, which I'll talk to you a little bit about here. But this is essentially the beneficial use program that the city has been going to since 1990 out at Madison Farms with our biosolids. And since 1992, when the cake program started, here's an example of how they spread the biosolids. Basically, a manure spreader is what this thing is. The trucks dump out. They take a front loader, bring the material into the hopper back here, and this thing kind of expels the biosolids out of the side. The biosolids are applied at what's called the agronomic rate, or rate to meet the nitrogen requirement of whatever you're putting the biosolids onto. For pasture, that's about 150 pounds of plant available nitrogen per acre per year is what we can land apply there. And you can see since 1992, over a million wet tons of biosolids have been successfully land applied at Madison Farms. Get more into this here in a second here. One of the benefits of our program is we like to have a partnership with local academic institutions. Oregon State University, which is the land-grant university for this state, has a great ag extension program. Dr. Dan Sullivan and Dr. Don Hornick have really helped the city look into, you know, is what we're doing at Madison Farms the right thing to do? Are there things we could be doing better? What are the long-term environmental benefits or any negative consequences of what we've been doing at Madison Farms? So last year we did a little paper, kind of a research study with Oregon State University, with Kent Madison at Madison Farms to look at, hey, we've been at Madison Farms for 20 years now. You know, what's the long-term picture of what we're doing here, and is this a sustainable practice? So I'm going to summarize the results of that study here, and if anyone's interested in the paper, I can give you that too. Dramatic increase in grass yield. So this is basically a compare and contrast, looking at land that had received City of Portland biosolids to the land at Madison Farms that had not received anything. Okay, so kind of just a compare and contrast. 530% increase in grass yield on the biosolids in underground. Pretty dramatic. It wasn't just a quantity increase, though. It was also a quality. We had more shoots and leaves, more digestible to the cattle, with a lower fiber, higher protein, and increased nutrient concentration as well. The soil saw very similar benefits of increased organic matter and nutrient concentrations. It's that recycling of nitrogen, phosphorus, organic matter. We're losing it all the time. This replenishes it, and what better way to do it? We did not see an accumulation of salts either, which is important to monitor in any agricultural setting. So from this perspective, it looks like a very sustainable, very beneficial program at Madison Farms. That all correlates to beef production. Again, the majority of our land is in pasture. You can see here, dramatic. Here's a biosolids amended ground to the land that had not. A pretty dramatic greening effect. Cattle come in and graze later, and because of that dramatic increase in forage quality and quantity, Kent Madison can raise up to 20 times the amount of cattle on a similar tract of land. Again, between land that had received biosolids and land that had not. He likes to show it as a 20x increase in cheeseburgers. So it's interesting also that this country natural beef label that you sometimes see applies to cattle that have been grown on biosolids amended ground. And country natural beef, I believe, signifies no hormones, no antibiotics, and humane animal treatment practices. So that's a nice label to see, and I'm glad that we can put our cattle under that label as well. What's really been in the news lately, these last few years, is carbon footprint of what anything that you're doing, from driving your car to recycling. So why not look at what we're doing with the biosolids program and see what the carbon footprint there is? We get criticized a lot for, you guys are taking your biosolids 200 miles east. That's a lot of trucking you guys are doing. What does that amount to in carbon credits? Well, that's about 500 tons of CO2 released per year. In burning the fuel and going back and forth to Madison Farms every day. And again, that's 6 to 7 trucks a day, every day of the year. Also, the fuel for land application, those manure spreaders, the front loaders, burns up about 35 tons of CO2 per year there as well. Again, that's released to the atmosphere. However, when you look at the amount of carbon that is stored or sequestered in both the forage that is grown on the biosolids amended ground and in the soil itself, that is 4,050 tons of CO2 sequestered per year, hence the negative sign. So when you look at the process in a net total, we're actually at a net carbon deficit of approximately 3,500 tons of CO2 per year, which is fantastic. Essentially, it's saying that biosolids land application is a carbon sink, which is what everyone's looking for, a beneficial place to store your carbon. OSU also looked at, since we're growing all this forage, one of the nice things about plants is they give off oxygen. 8,800 tons of beneficial oxygen for us to use every year as a result of biosolids amended forage. Great numbers here. I also mentioned that we have a small amount of ground established in irrigated canola at Madison Farms. Kent Madison, believe it or not, has his very own biodiesel production facility at the farm. The seed crushers here take harvested seeds from canola, crush it into oil. He has the option of making biodiesel at his very own facility or simply selling the canola to a company like Sequential, which is the Salem-based fuel company that is currently providing biodiesel for the city's own fleet and for Gresham Transfer. So we really love this program because we have City of Portland biosolids being used to grow canola, which turns into canola oil, which turns into biodiesel, which comes right back to the city for use in our very own fleet and the trucks that are hauling the biosolids. So a very nice recycling circular pattern we have here. We are very proud of the biosolids to biodiesel program. And you will see the sticker on some of the Sequential or Star Oil Co. rigs that are going down the highway sometimes. Obviously, very successful program at Madison Farms for 20 years, but the city always is looking at, could we be doing something better? So this last year, we had a biosolids request for proposals, or RFP, looking at potential other options for use of City of Portland biosolids. We were looking at, were there ways to strengthen, diversify, and enhance our existing program at Madison Farms? We obviously don't want to abandon Madison Farms. It's been such a great program for us. So we wanted to explore opportunities for cost savings, maybe reduce our diesel fuel consumption. So we offered up a 5-year contract with extensions up to 5 additional years. So a good 10-year project was available to someone for up to 25,500 wet tons of biosolids every year. That's about a third of what we're currently taking to Madison Farms. So we didn't want to do a complete gear shift. Let's start small. Let's see what's available at a smaller scale first. So we received, I believe it was 11 proposals from companies all over the country. Everything from very similar to what we're doing now, land application on agricultural or silvicultural forestry type ground. Proposals to make a soil amendment or a compost mix out of biosolids. We also had a renewable energy option, a company called Polaris Renewable Energy, wanting to take City of Portland biosolids, dry it up to about 90% solids, and then combust it in a coal-fired power plant, essentially as a coal substitute, is what they were proposing. So all of these proposals were evaluated by a pretty top-notch evaluation committee made up of members of the City of Portland's own staff, as well as outsiders. We had a University of Washington PhD specializing in carbon sequestering and greenhouse gas effects. We had Brown and Caldwell engineer specializing in biosolids management options. We had a PhD economist looking at costs and revenues. In the end, these were the criteria we looked at and the relative weighting for all of our proposals, everything from cost, biosolids use option, you know, is this a sustainable process? Is there a backup plan? Qualifications of the key personnel and experience. You know, we weren't really comfortable in going with a startup company that had no experience. Also looking at what are the community impacts of these proposals and the diversity and employment of these companies. So to make a long story short, after several months of meetings and evaluating, we selected a land application proposal from a company called K&S Madison to land apply City of Portland biosolids. Here's our current site at Madison Farms, right in between Morrow and Umatilla counties. It actually overlaps both counties. K&S Madison proposed to land apply biosolids in Sherman County. You can see it's about half the distance, to dry land wheat. We actually were in Sherman County in the year 2000 on kind of a trial basis. So K&S Madison proposed, okay, let's take a third of your biosolids that you used to be taking here to Madison Farms, redirect it to Sherman County, and land apply to dry land wheat. We'll save you a ton on fuel costs and bring the cost down for your ratepayers and spread the wealth of the benefits of biosolids to, you know, another part of Oregon's agricultural and economy, basically. The price you pay, one of the reasons why we're going so far out to Madison Farms is it's a semi-arid environment. They get 7, maybe 9 inches of rainfall a year. We're here, gosh, I don't know, we'll probably get 50 inches this year. Rainfall does bad things for biosolids, both in terms of being able to get trucks into fields, the manure spreaders, concerns about groundwater, surface water runoff. We can get onto the Madison Farm fields every day of the year, and that's important when we're making biosolids 24/7, 365, 70,000 wet tons every year. So Sherman County, yes, it's closer, but we are going to be limited by weather. So we can only go here during the dry months of the year. In fact, we're just about to start going to Sherman County 10 days from now. So it'll be a summertime program. So a seasonal program is what we'll have. During the summer, we'll be going to Sherman County here, taking advantage of a shorter transport distance. And during the rest of the year, we'll go back to Madison Farms and our all-weather site and have a nice balanced program as a result of that. And as a result of this proposal, our current cost to go to Madison Farms, and this is everything from transportation, fuel, land application, land lease, equipment lease, cost the city about $34 per wet ton of biosolids for our program at Madison Farms. The Sherman County proposal will cost us a little under $23 a ton. So you can see it's a pretty substantial cost savings for our ratepayers. And over the course of the 25,500 wet tons of biosolids that will be going to Sherman County, that equates to approximately a $280,000 annual cost savings for our ratepayers. So we're happy to offer that to our city, especially in these times when budgets are so constrained and there's not a lot of money to go around. So that is my brief talk on our program and where we're headed. Questions?
I do have a question. So what about the other material that's received at the plant and elsewhere, like from the street cleaning operations?
Okay. So you guys probably notice in your tours, not everything turns into biosolids. We have material at our headworks, the grit and screenings, for example. We can start with that. That is a very sanitary, very trash component of our waste stream. Right now it's going to a landfill. We are researching the possibility that we may be able to compost some of it, at least the grit portion, but for now it's going to a landfill. It's probably the most undesirable product coming out of wastewater treatment, the grit screenings. There was a company up in Tenino, Washington, that proposed composting it. They went out of business. That's the problem with a lot of these composters is they're here one day, gone the next. So landfill is where we're currently going with that stuff. If we can find a beneficial use for some of it, well, it's certainly something we're going to look at. Stormwater residuals that are dumped on our east pad, I don't know if you guys looked at that at all. So this is material coming out of our stormwater system, so no sanitary, just basically runoff from streets that, you know, gets into sumps or ditches. That is currently being beneficially reused as daily cover at the Wasco County landfill. So it's essentially going on top of the trash to assist in preventing odors, controlling vectors like mosquitoes, fire suppression. And the beauty of that is if you have a beneficial reuse like that, the metro fee goes away, and that is pretty substantial. That's like $20 a wet ton. So not only is it a more green environmental use of the product, it's a really big rate savings for our rate payers as well. After that, I think it's just trash that just goes. I'm not sure where our trash goes right now, which landfill. But, yeah, we do manage the grit and screenings program and the stormwater residuals out of our program as well. So we're kind of the catch-all program for residuals around here. But it's very interesting, too.
You said that composting operations are here today and gone tomorrow. Is that...
This one particular one that we were going to deal with, yes. And we had a composter, the movie that you took back there. We actually composted product late 80s, early 90s. Did you see our old composter here? We just couldn't do it economically. One part was, I think, the in-vessel Tom and Y system that we have on site here never put out what it was designed to do. I think we got maybe 1/6 of what it was advertised in terms of output. So the cost of the program was about, at the time, 3 times as much as going to land application to compost. The benefit of composting is you get what's called a Class A biosolids. Remember I said our biosolids right now are Class B, and that refers to pathogen reduction, which means Class B means you've significantly reduced pathogens. Class A means they're virtually gone, virtually undetectable. What I forgot to mention to you is Class B is a combination of our digestion process and what happens in the field. So we kill off the majority of the pathogens in the digester. When you land apply them, remember, these pathogens were used to living inside your gut. When they're exposed to the air, sunlight, drying, the microorganisms in the soil, they don't live long at all. So a combination of what's called field attenuation using Mother Nature and our digesters is pretty much going to get you Class A level. So the benefit of compost, not only does it get you Class A, what does Class A get you? It's the ability to just give the product away, essentially, you know, to the public. They can use it on their home gardens. There's a lot of Class A biosolids products at Home Depot or Lowe's that you can buy right now. So, but if it's 3 times the cost, could we justify it to our ratepayers when we have such a green environmental program out of Madison Farms? So the decision was made to shut down the composter and go with land application. We did have some composting bids in this RFP process that I mentioned that were significantly higher cost than our other options as well. So it's nice. What's nice about composting, I think, is it gets the community kind of involved in what you're doing. Hey, come get a bag of compost, you know, at our facility, use it in your home garden. Brings the public into what we're doing here at the treatment plant. Not a lot of people know what goes on at a wastewater treatment plant, what biosolids are or what they're being used for. So that is one of the benefits I see in it. But can you justify the amount of capital investment and O&M investment to make that work? And that's kind of what we have to evaluate. I love composting. I think it's a great process if you can do it economically. And we weren't able to do that with our last process.
So then, as far as using your Class B biosolids, are there places where it is either not safe or not allowed?
So I would say in the situation where, for example, if you wanted to apply in the valley in the middle of winter, where the groundwater table is right at the surface, or you have surface water right around you, certainly there's the opportunity for runoff. And as you know, nitrogen, phosphorus in local water bodies or groundwater is not a good thing to do. So yes, there would be places where that's not a good idea to do it, but that's where Oregon DEQ comes in. Remember, they have to authorize every site that you want to put biosolids on. If you're proposing applying in the middle of winter, you know, in a home garden across the street where it's, you know, pooled of water, they wouldn't do it. Yeah, so DEQ is our regulating authority in the state, and they would evaluate, is that a safe thing to do? Yeah.
So backyard gardeners and urban farmers would have to go through the DEQ in order to apply biosolids?
Yeah, and again, I don't think they would go through that hassle. The large-scale agricultural farmer is going to find it far more economical, I think, to go with a Class B product, a large volume type thing. The backyard garden urban farmer would be far better off going with a Class A product that some local agency has made in most likely a bagged form or something they can load on their truck. Because there is a nuisance factor with the regulations and the record-keeping truck traffic that you'd have to endure with a Class B product on a bulk scale like that. So I'd say compost is their best option, or some other form of Class A biosolids.
The Bureau of Environmental Services has both technology-intensive and low-tech approaches to managing stormwater. I'm thinking of the big pipe versus EcoRoofs. I went to an EcoRoof presentation about 5 months ago. Is there anything like that for sewage treatment, for instance? Are you moving in the direction of, let's say, encouraging people to do their own composting, or is anyone ever done that?
I used to work for the Bureau of Development Services, and so from time to time, the commercial plumbing section does get applications in for people who want to put in compost in toilets.
That's
so
right.
Yeah, that would be one agency that someone who's interested could talk to. And the state is looking at gray water regulations,
yes,
for the use of recycled water from home plumbing systems.
And, for example, couple programs we have that we don't manage here, but leafy debris, leaf waste is collected and composted at one of our facilities called the Sunderland Yard, and we are experimenting, not BES, but with food waste. I can't remember which communities. Is it Northeast? Certain parts of the town are experimenting with food waste being recycled now as well. Again, we're not directly involved with that, but...
So the city's gradually moving toward composting everything, including
human waste. I wouldn't say composting everything, but certainly open to exploring that possibility, I guess that is how I would word it.
During the tour that I got, the cost of the trucking operation for biosolids was mentioned, also the monthly electric bill. How do you see the future of wastewater treatment in the city and the various plants, and how do you see any challenges as far as budgetary challenges or other challenges in maintaining the city's stormwater and wastewater infrastructure?
It's challenging. You're right now, how much of a cut we took this year?
Substantial.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be tough. I think some of the programs that I think hope Mike showed you, like our cogen facility, where we're trending towards generating, or trending towards self-sufficiency, I guess, you know, generating as much power as we can by utilizing digester gas, for example, is a tremendous benefit and something that the wastewater industry is very proud of. There are some plants in this country that are completely self-sustaining in terms of power, and I think we're trending towards that. That we have this cogen online, maybe we'll get more in the future. As far as stormwater biosolids and our costs, I can tell you our costs, having attended there was a national biosolids kind of convention or conference in Savannah, Georgia a couple weeks ago, and for example, the city of Los Angeles and Los Angeles County are paying costs that approach $70 a wet ton for biosolids. So we're very competitive in terms of cost for our biosolids management option. We're always looking at what's out there, you know, if there are ways to save money in an environmentally friendly manner. hence the RFP that we went through last year. I do think it'll be a challenge going forward. I think what we're doing here in terms of cogen, I think we've got solar power coming on, constantly looking and evaluating better other alternatives, I think will help us get through that, and I think we will.
Well, I've only got a couple more questions. As far as professional composters, what's the market like, and how do they operate? And are there any composters in the United States who actually are composting human waste?
Oh, yeah. A good example is a company called Synagro. They're working pretty extensively in California. They did bid on our RFP here, not very competitively. So your question is, can they do it cost effectively, or?
Are people aware of them? Are they getting exposure? Are people actually using their product?
Yeah. I would say that company, there are some big ones like Synagro, are probably bidding on every major agency's biosolids program in the country. So composting is an option that is being evaluated by, I'd say, every major city in the country that has biosolids that they're looking for different options to deal with. Yeah, absolutely.
Synagro,
yeah.
Oh, Synagro, yeah. Okay. I've heard of them. Well, is there anything further you'd like to say? Anything that the public would find useful or informative?
I don't think so. I mean, just that the city is continually to strive to look for essentially the best triple bottom line option for biosolids, looking at the economics, the social, and the environmental impacts of what we're doing. And we'll always look for the best option and continue to do so.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.